Okay, I think we're going to go ahead and get started so we can afford our speaker as much time as possible tonight. I'm Terry Thornton. I'm Curator of Education, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern. As most of you know, Tuesday Evenings is an ongoing lecture series. We started a couple of weeks ago with Waleed Rodd. I hope that you were able to be here. It was a fantastic lecture. I hope you were here last week for Jeff Elrod. I'm sorry I missed that. I also, maybe more importantly, I hope that you've been able to spend time with the current Focus exhibition, which features Jeff's work. The galleries and the cafe remain open until 7 p.m. on Tuesdays during the run of the lecture series, and that's for your convenience. So I really hope you're able to take advantage of that and come back and see both the Focus exhibition and the new installation of the permanent collection. There are some pieces in it that I feel confident that many of you have never seen, and it's on both the first and second floor, and I really hope that you can spend some time. It's one of those that you need to see more than once, believe it or not. Next week, you're invited back for what promises to be a colorful and intriguing lecture by curator and writer Gavin Morrison on the hypothetical possibilities and ramifications of a Texas pavilion at the 54th Venice Biennale. In his presentation, Cowboys on the Lido. So I would advise you to mark your calendars and to tell everybody you care about to be here next week. Come early so that you can get a seat in the auditorium. Tonight's lecture is also one full of promise, and I think it's safe to say that expectations are always high when attending a presentation, a performance, or an exhibition of the work by Michael Smith. And that is for good reason. Michael Smith has been successfully engaging art audiences with the life and dreams of his sweet but hapless everyman persona known as Mike for 30-plus years. As seen in the exhibition Mike's World, Michael Smith and Joshua White and other collaborators, which debuted in 2007 at the Blanton Museum in Austin before traveling to the ICA in Philadelphia last year. It was aptly described in the New York Times, in a New York Times review, as a terrifically entertaining and philosophically compelling survey of Mr. Smith's 30-year career as a performance artist, video maker, and installation artist. In the same review, Times critic Ken Johnson describes Michael Smith as an undersung hero of the New York contemporary art world. And New York is, in fact, where Michael lives and works, while he also commutes to Austin, where he has been teaching transmedia and performance art at the University of Texas since 1998. With a BA from Colorado College and inclusion in the Whitney Museum Independent Study Program in 1970 and 1973, Michael has been guest lecturer and visiting professor at a number of art schools and universities, including Yale, the Museum School in Boston, Royal Danish Academy in Copenhagen, Cranbrook Academy of Art, and the University of Illinois at Chicago. His art has been recognized, documented, and rewarded with numerous publications and awards, including a Guggenheim Fellowship, no less than 3 NEA grants, and most recently a Lewis Comfort Tiffany Foundation Award. The work is included in significant collections such as that of the Walker Art Center, the Museum of Modern Art, the Center Georges Pompidou, and the Museum of Radio and Television in New York. His exhibitions span the U.S., Canada, and Europe, including solo exhibitions this year in Milan and London, as well as inclusion in the 2008 Whitney Biennial. And for those of you planning to be in New York this spring, I want to bring to your attention the upcoming exhibition, The Pictures Generation, that runs April 21st through August 2nd at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's an exhibition focusing on a group of influential New York artists that are known as the Pictures Generation, which includes 160 works by 20 artists. And one of those artists is, in fact, Michael Smith, who we are so fortunate to have with us tonight to present his presentation, A Night with Mike. So would you please join me in welcoming Michael Smith.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for coming. I'm going to get right into it. I've got 50 minutes, okay? So you heard about Mike, and so I think we're going to set a stage to give you a little background about Mike. It's around 1974. I'd been painting for a while, and I hit a wall, so to speak, a studio. Yep. And so I knew, instinctually, I knew it was time that I leave the studio and go out for inspiration. So I started to visit museums, galleries, concerts, movies, performances, art performances. There was this new field going on, performance art, and I was intrigued. It was also sort of the height of minimalism. So a lot of the time, well, it was minimal. And I'd be looking for something, maybe something more. And one day a friend suggested, I go to this comedy club and look at what they had there. Funny, another brick wall. I'd been a painter, figure ground, a figure in front of this brick wall. So I was intrigued, and I kept going back, watching these comics, until finally someone said, hey, Mike, why don't you get together a routine? So I did, and I brought it to the comedy club. Unfortunately, they closed, because my references were, well, process art, figure ground, site specificity, and, well, a lot of the stuff I was doing, these audio tapes, people found distressing. These tapes that I worked on my timing. So a lot of this, my early work was about what was going on in my mind, how one thinks. So I hit another wall, so to speak.
March 6, 1975. What you just heard was me kicking a dead horse with my right foot. I just tried my left foot. It doesn't seem to be working. Don't worry. I bothered to take my shoes off before I even started.
So that was one of my faster paces routines. So I continued. I started performing eventually. And what I started to do, they were like skits. I started to deal with stories, characters, until finally I landed on this character named Blandman, Mike. Let me get rid of this. This kind of regular guy. And he would turn up in performances, installations, musicals, in print, television, and come up against things in the world like nuclear disarmament or gaming or globalism or failure, wellness, many things. Until, luckily for me, last year, as Terry mentioned, Mike was kind of I don't know, honored, or Mike was given his own show, Mike's World. And Mike's World was an opportunity to sort of show Mike off in a, well, Mike ad nauseum, let's say. And the show was modeled after a presidential library. I spent a lot of time at the JFK Library, not JFK, the LBJ Library, and then it was a project of mine to go visit all these libraries. In fact, I know you people are going to be getting a wonderful library pretty soon in your neighboring city. Anyways, Mike's World, a lot of the same things. And I did it with Joshua White, a collaborator for the last 10 years. And we realized most libraries have orientation films. And most people don't know who Mike is, so it was important that we include an orientation film.
We all live in the world. Some of us also live in our own worlds. It is in that spirit that we welcome you now to Mike's World.
Hello?
A world of wonder, inhabited by a person who was born to wonder.
I wonder what I'll do today.
A simple person struggling to understand a complex world. A very special someone. Uniquely well-suited to be an everyman. A man whose mission is to wonder continually who he is. And who is he? He is Mike. Secure in this identity, he can shake hands with life on its own terms in 45-second intervals, one day at a time. This imbues his spirit with hope.
I look out on the horizon, and I see the future.
Having claimed his bona fides as every man, Mike's task is to bear witness to an everyday world. What does this world ask of Mike? Nothing less than a total commitment to puttering, hoping, tinkering, more hoping, dabbling, and of course, wondering.
What's my toilet doing on the television?
Plus the occasional foray into precariously optimistic entrepreneurship, earnest personal horizon expansion, and the pursuit of excellence, a quest never relinquished. That is the essence of Mike's greatness. Mike's world is a world of tiny details, details that others tend to overlook. This is the wind beneath Mike's wings, the fountain of his identity, the source of his satisfaction.
Coffee, a meal in itself.
Mike's world turns out to be not just one world, but a multifaceted amalgam of many different worlds. There's world of music. The world of dance. The world of high art.
Ce que je rêve, c'est un art d'équilibre.
The world of haute cuisine.
Garlic.
And let us not forget Mike's steadfast absorption with the world of television. From appreciation.
See what's on TV.
To production.
Now, Mike's a regular fella.
One day, Mike's soul became so flooded with hope that he was inspired to enter the world of business.
That's when I got the idea for my company. Music, Color, Musco.
As the world at large progressed, Mike made a valiant effort to follow suit, venturing into the complicated world of technology.
As the information superhighway continues to expand, artists will barely have enough time to sleep as they become the content providers for the future.
let's not forget Mike's deep, though fleeting, personal commitment to the world of politics.
1984. Things are getting pretty scary.
This brings us to the world of today, popularly known as the post-9/11 world, to which Mike has adjusted with characteristic ease, following the dictum of his 18th century counterpart, Candide, to wit, all is for the best in the best of all possible worlds.
That's odd.
I'm prepared.
And that is precisely how we, at this respected institution, hope you now feel. Prepared. Prepared to enter Mike's world. As you do so, take as your guide the words of the pre-Socratic philosopher Heraclitus. Men who love wisdom should acquaint themselves with a great many particulars. Because, as you are about to discover, we all live in Mike's world.
So, I'll just speak over the credits while those appear. We hired someone to write that. Gave him an outline, very specific bits to use, and when we were editing, the editor turned to me and said, okay, give me your music. And I said, I thought you had a library. He says, no. So I went online that night, looked up for stock music, and I found a piece of music called Mike, Fanfare for the Common Man. Best $29 I've ever spent. And then you walk into Mike's world. Okay? Some of the slides you just saw, installations, videos, puppet show. Oh, children. Pictures. Memorabilia, ephemera, timeline, drawings. A lot of Mike. So I want to go deeper now. I want to dig a little, give you a little better idea about who Mike was and where he came from. This is a recent drawing from memory of my family, of my creative brother, of my angry father, my very wonderful, loving mother, and my older sister. I was attached to my mother. This is a drawing I did back then, my gorgeous mother. And I grew up in a home that was, in the 50s, and like other homes in the 50s, this kind of Populux generation, we were like, we saw the world half, you know, the glass was half full. And I watched a lot of television, and I, like a lot of people, modeled my life around that. Or things were being modeled around these families out of sitcoms. So I naturally gravitated to a certain aesthetic when I came up with this piece called Mike's House from 1982, where Mike kind of enters the world of cable television. I grew up in a city. I'm an urban kind of guy, and somehow Mike's world seemed it was appropriate that it would be more suburban. And this is just a little teaser of it starts at home. Mike getting cable.
This is Mike's house. Mike's got a nice house. Open up the front door, a city scene. But hey, there's more than just one view from Mike's house. Going back through Mike's house, what happened to the urban? The scene has turned suburban. So let's go meet Mike, see what Mike's like. Hey, that must be
done this TV.
A Mike's location makes all the TV stations get horrible reception. He needs a new connection. Mike heard about cable. He read about cable. Thought about cable.
Gotta have cable.
Now he's got cable. He's trying out the cable. Hey, that can't be.
I'm on TV.
Mike's life, Mike's show. 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 Mike's life, Mike's show.
No, no,
my show.
No, no.
how'd I ever get into this mess?
Congratulations, Mike. Your cable's all set up now. No problem. I'll be seeing you.
Bye. Whoa. See what's on TV. Turn on the old set. Hey, what's going on? Getting a test pattern on every station. Let's try this cable here. That doesn't do anything. No nuts. Darn. What was that? Fuse? What is this music? Not getting any kind of picture or anything. What? Kinda looks like my rug. What the?
So I thought it was appropriate the first image that's cable cast of Mike is his ass. Back then, 25 years ago, cable was that kind of that space, that utopian space that artists were going to, you know, inhabit, and we were all going to benefit from. I don't know if it is anymore. We've got the internet now. This is a drawing. My mother was a big influence on me. This is a drawing my father and I. And it's called Fun at Home, and it's actually my father's sort of initiation. It's initiation into adulthood, maybe, or learning about being an adult. It's him giving me my allowance. And actually, I tried to work for my father. I went to work for him for about 4 months, and then I made a lateral move over to delivering pizzas and got involved in, you know, studio work. And I realized, after thinking about it, that business or working, which has become part of my work, my artwork, is sort of like play. It's like make-believe world for me. And which probably led me into this piece called Musco, which I did with Joshua White in 97 in New York at a gallery called Lauren Whittles. And it was a business I invented and then put it in bankruptcy. So the exhibition was a bankrupt business. There's the office, 30 years of accumulation, the showroom, and playing incessantly on a monitor is this industrial that was made in 1984, or made to look like it was made in 1984, of Mike's business called Musco.
Musco, the cutting edge in illumination. Musco. Theatrical, special effects, architectural, lighting for today, tomorrow, the future.
Hello, my name is Mike Smith, founder and president of Musco, a company committed to cutting-edge design and products for the illumination field. For the past 15 years, we've been collaborating with artists and manufacturers, working with their ideas and products, fine-tuning them and adding special features of our own before attaching our label and guarantee. At Musco, we thrive on collaboration. Our mission is uniting artistic conception with technical excellence.
Continuing a family tradition of over 30 years, Musco set new industry standards with its light show products for the home market, and established itself as a major presence in the mail order illumination business. With research and development facilities adjacent to the world-renowned Fillmore East, Musco met the fantasies of the psychedelic generation, while masterfully and instantaneously bridging the gap between art, technology, and commerce.
Well, I was working for my dad at his hardware store in downtown Manhattan, and one day this hippie came in and placed an order for 2 dozen dimmers, 1 dozen trip lights, and 4 cases of UVL 250-watt lamps. So I said, excuse me, but do you mind if I ask, what are you going to be doing with all this stuff? Some sort of happening? Well, it turns out that this hippie happened to be Joshua White from the Joshua Light Show, from the world-famous Fillmore East. Well, to make a long story short, he gave me a pass to see what he was up to with all this stuff at the Fillmore. So I went, and I'll never forget it. Deep Purple was jamming. And there was a light show going on behind him. It blew my mind. That's when I got the idea for my company. Music, Color, Musco.
Responding to the needs of the burgeoning disco culture in the 1970s, Musco amplified its special effects lighting and rental division, providing durable equipment designed for efficient and easy maintenance. The Musco module, at first a practical solution to basic requirements, developed into Musco modular systems, interchangeable interlocking units for illuminated floors, walls, and ceilings. Efficient, durable, compelling. After years of researching and integrating advancements in the field of video projection and computer display technologies, Musco introduces the newest addition to the Musco modular family, the Musco modular video wall projection system. A quick, easy, lightweight solution to permanent video wall installations. Ideal for corporate, residential, commercial, and semi-permanent displays.
There actually is something new in the works. We're about to launch a new Musco line, interior-exterior architectural track lighting. We'll be in partnership with Advanced Hardware, my father's company. They'll supply the switches and the housing. We'll supply the design and the Musco guarantee.
Musco. Continuing a family tradition for over 35 years. Seeking new and exciting ways to illuminate the future.
As we approach the midway point of the decade, Musco will continue to offer an unprecedented 5-year warranty on all products and services, guaranteeing our clients today they will be protected tomorrow and into the 1990s.
Musco, special effects lighting. Musco modular systems. Architectural interior exterior track lighting. Video wall projection systems. Musco, the cutting edge illumination.
So, Right before we opened, the dealer came up to me and she wanted me to be the first one to know that, to tell me that her gallery would be closing in 2 months. Right after that, Soho started to lose its hold in the art world. It sort of moved over for boutiques, high-end boutiques, and then it moved to Chelsea. Now there's another wave. It's moving away from Chelsea to the Lower East Side again. I'm trying to figure out where this artistic, you know, interest in art came, because as you can notice in my grades in art, I was not really doing very well when I was younger. And but I persisted, and I always was trying to see that glass half full, even though personally I see it half empty a lot of the time. And I'm not one to, like, I'm not really big about art, but sometimes opportunity comes, it presents itself that I just have to take advantage of it.
Soon we'll enter the 21st century when curatorial responsibility will be transferred into the hands of the artist.
the probability for redirecting and expanding opportunities and dialogue will be increased exponentially. There must be at least 25 announcements here for group exhibitions. My work would have looked really good in at least 75% of these shows. Oh, great. Chain letter. Hey, Cindy Sherman's name's on the list.
And do it again.
Pretty good company. As the information superhighway continues to expand, artists will barely have enough time to sleep as they become the content providers for the future.
And do it again. Do it again. Do it again.
Looks like a very interesting group exhibition. I think reconsidering context would be a good title.
And do it again. Do it again. Do it again.
All of us at ITEA are very excited about plans to post the group exhibition Reconsidering Context onto our website, which, by the way, will be visited by millions globally. Boy, I can't wait to get online. As soon as I get a modem for this thing, I'm going to have my own homepage.
Do it while your soul's still burning. Don't lie the evening away. Say what you want to say.
So that piece was done in 96, I believe. This crew came in, shot it, took it away, edited it, presented it to me.
It's great.
I was saying, you know, I'm really not big on art about art, but this opportunity came up to make another piece at in 99 at the New Museum. And so with my collaborator at the time, Joshua White, at the New Museum, we made Mike a loft in the basement of the New Museum and made Mike an artist. So the installation was basically a shell for 30 years of artwork for Mike. And Mike had gone through this kind of trajectory that many artists had done. He'd been a sculptor. He became a sculptor. He was a sculptor that documented his work, became involved in public access television, considered himself a video artist, then had to pay the bills, and then wasn't a very good artist, but he ended up with a loft, and he was going to sell it in Soho. So he was going to cash in. But his history is hooked into the space, so it's creating a little anxiety. So before he sells it, before he sells the loft, he's put it up for sale, he's given himself a survey exhibition. So this is like a brief overview of the show. 5-minute excerpt.
Sweat Equity, which is the earliest piece in the show, and it was done in 1978, and It's included in the asking price. Oh, the documentation, the video Portapak documentation for Sweat Equity is playing over on the monitor to my left and your right over there. So... This is actually a very good angle to get a sense of the possibility, the potential of a live workspace. Notice that I have a screening room set up over here to watch Interstitial, a cable access show I produced from 1982 to 1985. It's playing on the monitor over there in the corner. Again, feel free to sit down and watch some selections. I'm Mike Smith of Interstitial TV. Interstitial, the place between two places where ideas and dialogue and opinions come together, intersect, or overlap.
The title is Soaring.
Soaring. Oh, I saw that piece, I think, in when you were workshopping it, it was called... did you do another show called Flying?
It was called Flying, but it's developed and progressed into Soaring.
Oh, June's giving me the signal. The time's running out. Thank you, and good night, and Zandra. Zandra.
Thank you.
Yeah. When I think New Expressionism, right, I think images. Are those Band-Aids the image, or is that the grid? So it, the reunion here, the Sohood reunion and AIR-TV, it's very exciting. Our five-year reunion, and I'd like to take this opportunity to show some of our collaborative efforts. Ronald, could you roll the Sohood reel? Thank you. This has been great for me for years. What else? Show was great.
So, cable television, public access, the internet—that's that new space, that new frontier. In answer to that, a couple years ago, I did another piece with Joshua White. Talking about this interactivity, I find that the internet, I've become more inactive in my life. And so this is a piece that was at Dun & Brown, actually, and some other places, and in Mike's World. And It's sort of based on some of the music and based on It's a Small World After All, the Disney, you know, that global community. And it's this revolving kiosk. And on the two different, there's a lenticular photo, there's this, that thing you see, the hands, pants on, pants off, and a couple songs. The first one.
A huge world full of choices, everything under the sun, infinite variety, a bountiful life of fun, imagining a future at home for work or play, looking forward to a time no pants on every day, release of all your burdens, a longing to be free, safe indoors from others' view.
And on the other television that's constantly, incessantly playing.
It's fresh, it's fun, it's for everyone, a brand new game. The object is to finish your errands as fast as possible, get home, and take off your pants. Don't forget about the time. Set the timer, make a list, put on pants, go outside. Laundry, post off, Xerox, recycle. Take off your pants. Wow, that's fun. Okay, who's next? Set the timer, make a list, put on pants, go outside. Pick up dry clean, get haircuts, kitty litter, paper towels, milk. Go to bank. Take off your pants. Keep it going. Get it all done. Set the timer, make a list, put on pants, go outside. Envelopes, pick up shirts, Xerox shop, go to bank. Rent a movie, food for dinner, onions, garlic. Go back home, shut the door, and take off your pants!
Okay, I'm going to take it down a notch. I'm going to stay on the same theme. I'm going to move a few years forward. And it's 19, it's, oh, this is a piece I did, recently did. It's my, one of my more recent pieces, 2005 to 2007. I was a fellow at MIT, at the Center for Advanced Visual Studies. And I did this piece about, online learning. There's this incredible open courseware there. And anyways, I responded to various things that I saw and experienced there, and this is what I came up. It's called Portal Excursion. Oops. It's called Portal Excursion.
When I was a young child, my Uncle Ben took me aside and said, "Mike, if you take two words out of the dictionary every night and learn them right before you go to sleep, by the time you are my age, you'll have a huge vocabulary." Each night, I would pick out two new words and repeat them over and over again in my head as I gradually fell asleep. I learned 730 words the first year. It was fun. Eventually, I devised a system to keep everything straight in my mind. At the time, I was really into model railroads, so I started associating train cars with specific words. Things would go into boxcars, actions were connected to engines, and adjectives were put into cabooses. Depending on the color, shape, and function of the car, I would connect words with it. For example, a blue boxcar, which had three syllables, was equivalent to 321. Two stood for blue box, which sounded like machinery or a cannon report. Blue referenced the color of a policeman's uniform. So blue boxcars stood for any kind of uniform, like a machinist, a nurse, or a policeman. A soldier was 321S or BBCS. 321. Most people found my system confusing. All I can say is, it worked for me. My life was pretty full for a 9-year-old. It felt like the sky was the limit in regards to what I was capable of learning. If I continued at the same rate of 2 words a day, I would learn 3,500 new words by the end of grammar school. And by the end of college, my vocabulary would be close to 10,000 words. Sometimes in my 30s, I'd be closing in on 20,000 words. These figures kind of got off track when I went to college. By the time I hit the books, it was pretty late in the day. Unfortunately, too often I'd come across a word I had memorized sometime in the past, and before I knew it, I was on this endless train ride being lulled into a deep sleep. When I look back on my college days, it's a big blur of names and faces. And even though I slowed down on my approach to the 40,000 mark, I still get kind of nostalgic when I think back on that time. After college, I got a job and settled into the comfortable life. I kept the memory trains going, however, now they were filled with names, dates, and appointments, I would transfer into my daytime. After years of getting really good at something and doing it day in and day out, my life started to feel kind of empty. I guess I was going through what some people call a midlife crisis. I needed a change.
The Open Courseware, a free and open educational resource for self-learners and educators within the global community. OCW, a web-based initiative of MIT, one of the most prestigious institutions of higher learning in the world. Offering more than 1,200 courses in over 30 different fields of study. A remarkable collection of free, high-quality educational materials. OCW, a specially designed program for self-learners committed to integrating real-world experience with online research. A convenient way to extend knowledge while balancing everyday obligations. OCW. Open and free. Educational materials for the world. Cutting-edge information with hands-on experience. A vital link between thought and action.
I was inspired and determined to go through the entire Open Courseware catalog from A to Z. I put this hand-in-mind business to work, typed in OCW and MIT, and started my journey. I immediately came upon a course that intersected with my real-life experience. I moved on to anthropology, architecture, and breezed through a history course. I decided to spice up my program and work my way onto the email lists of various campus organizations and clubs. Within weeks, I managed to go through 20% of the Open Courseware's notes, syllabi, and lectures. I was busy moving freely through the complex OCW system,
only one keystroke away from the next course description, syllabus, or video lecture. As I got deeper and deeper into the workings of MIT, its ethos, and its language. I was accumulating new words and definitions at such an accelerated and propitious rate that it felt like I was matriculating and cramming for finals at the same time. During a self-imposed study break, I got an email from the Model Railroad Club directing me to Open Mind, a research project about common sense. They needed volunteers to teach computers information that we take for granted. I immediately signed up and was on the case, sharing all those words and definitions I had accumulated over the years, making connections rather than just memorizing and counting. All these years of being caught up in the pursuit of loading the trains, accumulating words in large numbers that I never considered where I was going with all of this. Sure, I could go for the quarter million mark, but why? Call it intuition or gut feeling, I knew it was time to stop the trains. I was primed to move forward into new territory, a self-appointed mission of filling in the blank spaces with my words, an undertaking that could keep me profoundly busy for an indefinite period of time.
Deep. So, I don't know if I want to end it on this kind of note. And since we're kind of going down memory lane, I think I'm going to go a little bit further, give a little more history, or a little, I don't know, maybe a little more psychological fodder to get think about. This is another character I'm just going to gloss over. This is Baby Icky. Baby Icky was, recently had a birthday party. He comes up every May 3rd. He's going to be, well, let's say his first birthday was when I first performed in 1975. And I was in your cafe there, and I noticed a Lawrence Wiener piece, so I thought I'd end it on this image of the baby. The name of the baby is Baby Icky. It's like palindrome, so no matter how you look at it, forward or backward, it's still a baby. Although, when the baby came out, appeared, let's say, I realized it was not neutral. I thought it was a neutered kind of thing. It was more like, I guess it's fairly male. Anyways, I'm going to play you a quick piece of the baby, and then we'll open it up for questions. Oh, you're going to love this. Yeah. Okay. Oh, it's frontal. There we go. It's inserted. Get your questions together. You'll have 2 minutes to ask them. We'll be breaking up into splinter groups, so you'll have a minute. reading. Portal Excursion. Let's say I produced that piece when not the best time of my life. Okay. All right. So, I think that's a good place to end it. Thank you. Should we take questions? Any questions? Please.
What are your translations in German?
That was produced for Austrian television. I've done a few projects. That French one was produced for a French, you know, program. Anybody else? Hey, I'm right in on the time. Pro.
What are you working on right now? What's your next
baby? I'm working. Baby went to Burning Man last summer. It was insane. It's a project I'm doing with Mike Kelly, and it's scheduled to be at Sculpture Center this fall, and then it's going out to LA. It's a big. Actually, I'm going there to work on this weekend, in LA. It's going to be interesting. A lot of fire.
Experience of
Mike's
world, that, you know, putting all that information together, all of that, and how did that impact
on my health?
Yeah, so, did that have any kind of impact on
Well, it made me, I've always thought I'd never really, I'm always thinking I haven't done it. It made me realize that I've done a few things. It was nice to have a tidy package of it. But Mike is this ongoing project, and it was nice to be able to put everything together and to pack it up and to put. I mean, it was the first time that it felt good to put something in storage. It was kind of contained. It was interesting. It was great to see. It also made a lot more sense. The work made a lot more sense together.
Yeah.
A lot more sense. So that was great. To get that acknowledgement too is great. Anybody?
What compelled you to go into the video art and such, coming from the traditional media? Was it the ability to be able to tell more of a story?
Well, the transition from painting to telling stories was, I mean, I was kind of glib today, but there was like a real break in that production there. It was, I literally dried up. I didn't have anything to say in painting. And how I got to video is different than how I got to telling stories. When I started making video, I happened to be at the right place at the right time and luck, too. I mean, they were funding that kind of work, and I was making it. And not a lot of people were making that kind of work then. So, and it was like, it was a way to, an opportunity to present itself. I took it. It was also a way to record stuff, and so it developed, and it was natural. And I also realized that I was kind of raised on television, so it was a natural kind of move there. It happened organically.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Anybody else? Please.
I just want to say I've got standing, and it was almost like a forerunner, and I can't pronounce it, but it's Philip Seymour Hoffman's movie that I have yet to understand, except yours was more clear.
Doubt?
No.
Oh, I never saw that.
You never saw it?
I've been there, I think, but no, I never saw that. Been there, done that. Should I see it?
Yes.
I only hear people trying to pronounce it.
Really good. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It took a while to get, I think, this lecture. It's been in progress for a while. I'm going to keep it like this for 10 years. It's not going to change. I've got the keynote. I've got, it's set. Nothing changing. I'm not going to make any more work. It's going to stay in storage. Anybody else? Please.
Do the class photograph works, are those in the vein of, like, is that the reality, or is that Mike being a teacher?
Well, they are my classes.
Right.
And so they are in that reality of my classes. They also take up a day of class, which is great. It's a chronicling of my teaching. And it's not quite Mike, it's me, but I've been showing them lately. I have 28 of them. I'll have two more this semester. So it's a record of an aging process. Those goddamn kids stay the same age and I get older. And, you know, they look good together. Anybody else? Thank you.